Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Charlie Kirk Show. So thrilled to be sitting down with our amazing friend, True Patriot, from the great state of Texas. Might be one of the best states in the country. We have some bias here on the Charlie Kirk Show towards that, but we love the great state of Texas, state that loves liberty, loves freedom. And I'll tell you, Senator Ted Cruz, he is a true champion for the Constitution and for our country. And we have a really exclusive conversation here in just one moment that we're going to share with you. It's one that you will not want to miss, but make sure you are subscribed to the Charlie Kirk Show. Type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider and press subscribe. Give us those 5-star ratings and leave us a review. This is Charlie Kirk, host of The Charlie Kirk Show. Buckle up, everybody. We've got a great show in store. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Make sure you guys are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show and enjoy this conversation with Senator Ted Cruz. This was right before he took the stage at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. Some real amazing insight into the impeachment process, stuff that you will not hear anywhere else. Enjoy our exclusive conversation with Senator Ted Cruz. Welcome, Senator Ted Cruz, to The Charlie Kirk Show, and thanks for being here at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit.
Absolutely. It's awesome to be here.
So there's a little bit happening in Washington right now. What's your immediate reaction to all this impeachment nonsense that's been happening?
Look, it is nuttiness, and I think the House has been an absolute circus. And what I think is really most important is what we've seen over the last month is the House Democrats' case has collapsed. It's fallen apart, and we are seeing House Democrats in absolute panic. And the only people panicking more than the House Democrats are the press. The press, who have become Adam Schiff's press secretary, every one of them collectively putting on that hat. And they're in free fall because everything they promised the voters that they were going to prove through this one-sided show trial – they haven't proven.
That's exactly what it is, a show trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now that it's to the Senate, so I guess you're a juror? I mean, well, I hate saying that, but it...
Yes, although it's more complicated than that. And so the constitutional process for impeachment, number one, the standard of impeachment is laid out in the Constitution, that impeachment of a president is available when the president has committed treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, as an initial matter, the House utterly failed to demonstrate that. But they nonetheless voted a party-line vote, not a single Republican with them, a party-line vote because they hate the president. And so impeachment now presumably goes to the Senate. I say presumably because Nancy Pelosi is playing games right now saying she's not going to deliver the articles of impeachment.
What does that even mean? I clarify it because people are messaging me to say, what does this mean? I don't quite get that.
It's somebody in a strategy session came up with the dumbest argument ever, which is Nancy Pelosi's trying to dictate to Senate Republicans, here's the process you got to follow. And her threat is, do what I say or else we won't impeach Donald Trump. Okay. Fine by me. I don't care if she ever sends the articles. If her plan is to just take them and bring them back to San Francisco and put them on a coffee table for some woke party to show, look, isn't this neat? These are the articles we voted on. All right, fine. But it's only impeachment if the House – what impeachment means is the House brings charges before the Senate. If she doesn't send the articles over, he hadn't been impeached. They haven't actually done what impeachment is. And the reason she's doing it is its weakness, its terror. Why? Because their case is so weak that any fair process, any fair trial will demonstrate how absurd it is, and she knows that.
So she's basically saying, unless you guys come to our demands, we won't send you the articles, as if it's something the Senate wants
and you know
or
what?
Something they need.
If she never sends the articles, then the Senate in January will get back to doing our jobs, which is what the American people want, mm-hmm. focusing on more jobs and higher wages, focusing on securing the border and protecting this country, focusing on rebuilding the military and confirming judges to defend the Constitution and Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. That's what Texans are focused on. You know, when I go home, there's such an amazing disconnect. When you're in Washington, D.C., the only thing people want to talk about is impeachment. When I'm back in home in Texas, if you know, when I'm doing a town hall, when I'm taking questions, nobody asks about impeachment. Nobody cares because they recognize it's just a partisan circus. It's mm-hmm. not driven by facts. It's not driven by substance. But if it does get to the Senate, so if Nancy realizes that her bluff isn't going to work, then what will happen in the Senate is that we're going to conduct a fair trial. A fair trial means both sides will be given the opportunity to make their case. The House managers will have the chance to make whatever arguments they want. They can rely on whatever evidence they can. But you better believe that President Trump is going to have a full and fair opportunity to defend himself and to make his case, and we're going to respect due process. And then if and when that happens, if and when we have a Senate trial, the end result will be that this ridiculous sham will be thrown out. Why? Because they haven't met the constitutional standards of high crimes and misdemeanors. On the face, the articles don't allege high crimes and misdemeanors, so it's not going to succeed. That's what Nancy knows. It's why she's scared to send him over.
SimpliSafe Home Security is like getting commercial-grade, enterprise-level security, but for your own home. I got to tell you, all the properties I care about use SimpliSafe Security. It's the number one thing people worry about outside of public speaking is getting their house broken into. And I can tell you from experience, you do not want to be in a house without security. They need to, you know, you got to have to know how to get the police to your house, and that's what SimpliSafe does. Think about the security Fortune 500 companies use. That's what SimpliSafe is able to do. This is exactly the kind of security you get with SimpliSafe. If there's a break-in, they use real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime, and that means police dispatches up to 350% faster than the normal burglar alarm. With SimpliSafe, you get a comprehensive protection for your home. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you to anyone approaching your home. Right now, I could check out any property I care about right on my phone right here, right now. I can see everything that's going on. Plus, SimpliSafe protects your home from fires, water damage, carbon monoxide poisoning, and it's all monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. You can set it up yourself with no tools needed, or they can do it for you. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. It's amazing. So right now, go to do you have property you care about? Do you have something that you guys want to have protected? Or are you okay with bad people breaking in the middle of the night? I didn't think so. So do something about it. Go to simplysafe.com/Charlie. You got free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure to go to simplysafe.com/Charlie so they know our show sent you. That's simplysafe.com/Charlie.
So there's two schools of thought. One is do a quick trial, get it done with almost in a day, dismiss it. And the other is let's call witnesses to the stand like Hunter Biden and Adam Schiff. Where do you fall down? Or do you think that's just probably too binary, if you will.
So I think it may be somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. Assuming Nancy actually doesn't run away from this whole thing. By the way, if she never sends the articles of impeachment, it means the whole end of this is total surrender from the Democrats, and their strategy is like out of Monty Python. Run away! Yes. Run away! Okay, the end. That's fine. But all right, let's assume she realizes that's a disaster for them, and she sends them over. Here's what'll happen. Early January, we'll see a trial. The first step is the Chief Justice comes over to the Senate and swears in all 100 jurors. The proceeding that will likely unfold then is the 100 jurors, the 100 senators, are all sitting in our desks, listening to the presentation of evidence. It starts with the House managers. I assume we'll see people like Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and whomever.
They could bring anyone they want.
Whoever Nancy appoints will be there, and they present their case. And that, if it follows the model of the Clinton impeachment trial, that will probably be about 24 hours of presentation from the House managers. It may be something like 6 hours a day, mm-hmm. spread over 4 days. Then the White House, their team, will present their case, and it will probably be a comparable period of time, let's say another 24 hours, 6 hours a day, mm-hmm. spread out over 4 days. The next step is questioning from senators.
Really? I see. This is so informative. Go ahead.
Well, but what you will not see is you're not going to see Elizabeth Warren and me going 15 rounds on national television, as much fun as
and,
that
and
would be.
You won't do a 23-hour speech. How long was that one, by the way, that you did?
It was just over 21 hours.
Okay, that's okay. 21 hours. Anyway, so.
So you won't see that happening because the Senate rules provide that no senator can speak in open session. That means when the C-SPAN cameras are on, we are required to be silent. We're required to be in our seats in our desk, actually on penalty of prison. Like if a senator doesn't show up, the sergeant at arms is authorized to go and put us in leg irons and
leg irons?
Quite literally leg irons.
So Senator Elizabeth Warren, she can't campaign for president during this impeachment trial.
All of the Senate Democratic candidates will be presumably in Washington throughout January.
And you know how important it is to be in Iowa before the Iowa caucus.
You
won Iowa last time.
We're in uncharted territory. There's never been the case where you have a bunch of the top contenders who aren't in Iowa, who aren't in New Hampshire, who are sitting on the floor of the Senate. And I think the trial is likely to last anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks.
But you're talking about they're going to accuse Mitch McConnell of preventing Elizabeth Warren from campaigning because of an impeachment they passed in the House, because then she has to sit as a juror.
And by the way, Nancy Pelosi totally controlled the timing of when the House voted to impeach. Do you know, by the way, the House voted to impeach on the exact same day, December 18th, that the House voted to impeach Bill Clinton?
Do you think that was a coincidence?
I think it's a coincidence, but it's also sort of natural timing of winding down before Christmas.
Sure.
Going into an election year. So January, you have the impeachment trial. There's a natural timing to that as well. But when the senators are asking questions, the way it works is we ask written questions. So we write questions, and the Chief Justice asks them
for us. So you can't stand and
I, as much as I would love to cross-examine
Hunter Biden. I'm just saying the name.
So it starts with questions from the senators for the House managers and the president's legal team. And the Chief Justice asks our questions.
So he has to take all your questions? Is that by law?
Yeah. Or? He has to stand up. And so he asks the questions.
Wow.
And then after that, I think there's a fork in the road. I think it is possible that probably takes about 2 weeks to get through what I just described.
It's a long time, Senator.
It is a long time. It will be a lot of hot air, but it will also be the first chance the White House defense team has had to make their case on a national level. You know, if you look at what the House of Representatives did, they didn't allow any cross-examination from the White House. They didn't allow Republican witnesses to be called, so it was just one side of this case.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have it's why Pelosi is nervous, because she's already in an incredibly weak position and the defense hasn't started.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I think one of two things will happen. After a couple of weeks, after the presentation to both sides, it's possible that the Senate will say, you know what, we've heard enough, let's vote. And to vote to remove a president from office takes two-thirds of the Senate. So it takes 67 senators voting guilty. And by the way, when we vote, we'll vote on each article. So the verdict will be on Article 1, guilty or not guilty. On Article 2, guilty or not guilty.
Wow. And one by one roll call vote, right, for the whole country to see.
Yep. And so that's why this ends with failure for the House Democrats. There are not going to be 67 senators voting to remove the president. They know that. It's not going to succeed. You know, my view on the question of calling witnesses. So I think the two sides are in very different positions. Chuck Schumer tried to send a demand to Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans.
For Mulvaney and for Bolton.
He gave a list of witnesses, four witnesses, including Mick Mulvaney, John Bolton. He said, I want the Senate to call these witnesses. Now, I got to admit, our reaction is we just laughed at him.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a proceeding going on in the House for months. If they want to call these witnesses, they can call these witnesses. Mm-hmm. And I'll give an example. Let's drill down a little bit into John Bolton. So John Bolton, as you know, was National Security Advisor for the president for about a year and a half. The House Democrats asked John Bolton to testify in the House. Now, what John Bolton did, I actually think, was very wise and very clever. John Bolton's lawyer went to the federal district court, and he said, I've received a request from Congress to testify. I also have received an instruction from the White House not to testify based on executive privilege. And John Bolton said, Judge, tell me what to do. I've got two conflicting legal obligations here. I'll do whatever you tell me. Tell me how to comply with the law. You know what the Democrats in the House did?
They held him in contempt, or
nope.
Did they subpoena him, or nothing?
They said, never mind. They literally
wow.
went away. They told the district court, don't worry about it anymore. So they never subpoenaed him.
Because they knew they were in a legal
They just decided. Bind. They took the position that a president's asserting privilege is impeachable conduct. The second article, it's not obstruction of justice. You know, obstruction of justice.
I've never heard obstruction of Congress before.
It's obstruction of justice is a felony. It
yes.
is a high crime or misdemeanor. It is obstruction of justice is one of the counts on which Bill Clinton was impeached. It's mm-hmm. it's one of the articles of impeachment that the House considered against Richard Nixon. But the problem is the House Democrats couldn't prove obstruction of justice.
Wow.
So instead, they're arguing that claiming a privilege is obstruction of Congress. And it's as weak as Article 1 is, and it's an incredibly weak article, Article 2 is orders of magnitude weaker. I mean, because here's actually how the House would do it if you were actually trying to assert your rights. The House would issue a subpoena to John Bolton or Mick Mulvaney or whoever they wanted, and then they'd go to court and they'd fight it out. You know, you remember in the Nixon impeachment, and you and I are both too young to remember the Nixon impeachment, but we do
remember reading about the Nixon impeachment.
You know, we had history books.
Yeah.
So in the Nixon impeachment, that ended up, there was a grand jury subpoena that was litigated all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court ordered the Nixon White House to hand over the White House tapes. Remember, Richard Nixon had a tape recording device in the Oval Office, and the Supreme Court said, hand over the tapes. And I think it was 2 days later, Nixon resigned as president.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually how you litigate these claims, where the White House was claiming privileges. It was litigated in the courts. It went up to the Supreme Court. And in that instance, the White House lost. If the House wants to get these witnesses, they have an avenue to do it. So I said this week when Chuck Schumer said, call these witnesses, I said, listen, if Democrats want to call these witnesses, do it in the House. Actually mm-hmm. do it right. Issue a subpoena and win the legal battle. Don't just expect the Senate to do your work for you.
Wow.
On the other hand, the president and the White House are in a very different situation because they've never had an opportunity to call witnesses. The House denied them their chance. So it's been entirely a one-sided presentation. My view is if the president wants to call witnesses, if the president wants to call Hunter Biden, if the president wants to call the whistleblower, the Senate should allow the president to call those witnesses. Now, if that comes to pass, that may be a fight in the Senate. And by the way, that fight will be resolved on the floor of the Senate with 51 senators. So mm-hmm. this is, you asked before if senators are jurors. The answer is yes and no. There's certainly a component in which we are jurors.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a juror in the sense of any other jury on earth.
You also have say in who actually participates, right?
We do. But look, juries in a criminal trial are... Senators are not sequestered. We're not required. Look, if you or I were a jury in a criminal trial,
locked away
we couldn't be having a conversation about mm-hmm. the merits of this trial now.
Sure.
There's no requirement for senators to be sequestered. There's no prohibition on ex-party communications, which means senators can talk with whomever they want. Jurors couldn't do that. You couldn't talk with the prosecution. You couldn't talk with the defense mm-hmm. counsel. So during the Bill Clinton impeachment trial, Senate Democrats were talking to Bill Clinton in the White House all the time.
Sure.
And you know what? That is the framers of the Constitution actually had a big debate about how to resolve impeachment. And the Federalist paper, Federalist 65, Alexander Hamilton mm-hmm. writes about why they chose the Senate to resolve impeachment. And they debated – so the other choices they debated, they consider the Supreme Court. So they said, well, maybe when a president's impeached, maybe we have the Supreme Court do the trial. But the reason they rejected this, and this is what Hamilton argues in Federalist 65, he said, look, the Supreme Court won't have the credibility with the American people to resolve a question like this and won't have the strength to stand up to the political pressures.
Hmm.
They also considered doing a hybrid, basically combining the Supreme Court and the Senate together.
Which they've almost done.
And
with,
they've having the
Roberts.
Chief Justice
yeah.
preside is sort of it's a limited hybrid. But the framers understood that by giving it to the Senate, senators are elected by the people. They are political players, and you're required to be impartial. You're required to decide based on facts and law, but most fundamentally, you're required to follow the constitutional standard. And the constitutional standard is that impeachment requires bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. That hasn't been met here. But on the question of calling witnesses, the way it works is any procedural motion is resolved by the Chief Justice, but any ruling from the Chief Justice can be overruled by 51 senators. So it's of every question of law is determined by 51 senators. Now, during the Bill Clinton impeachment, what Chief Justice William Rehnquist did is he just deferred immediately to the Senate.
And you clerked under Rehnquist, right?
I did. So
continue. Sorry, if I remember that correctly.
Well, and yeah. John Roberts did too. So John Roberts was a law clerk for William Rehnquist.
Wow.
I was a law clerk for William Rehnquist. A number of years later, we didn't clerk together, but we both clerked for the chief, for Rehnquist.
Yeah.
And Rehnquist, I think, wisely deferred to the Senate because, listen, he didn't want to get overruled by the Senate. No chief justice wants to issue a ruling and then have 51 senators overrule him. So he just immediately said, all right, senators decide. I expect John Roberts to do the same. I think he's quite likely. So the way this would come to a head is Pat Cipollone, the White House counsel who's expected to lead the president's defense team, would stand up on the floor of the Senate and say, Mr. Chief Justice, I call Hunter Biden to the stand. And it could very well be teed up as a vote on the Senate floor. Whether or not we call Hunter Biden.
So if it hits 50, who breaks the tie?
Then it doesn't. It takes 51. Because the vice president can't break the tie. So the vice president is not presiding.
Vice president has...
And you wouldn't want the vice president to have an involvement in the impeachment of the president. Because if the president gets removed, the vice president becomes president.
Correct.
And
yes.
So that
the
would be...
The founders foresaw that as a potential conflict.
Yes and no.
They might not have articulated it.
Although at the time, the president and vice president didn't have to be of the same party. So you could really end up with a screwy situation where, you know, imagine you had a Republican president and a Democratic vice president. If the vice president were presiding, I mean, it would be very much in their interest to see their boss removed. Mm-hmm. So that's not a factor. That's one of the reasons the Chief Justice presides.
And so they'd call a vote to the Senate for Hunter Biden or whomever. And if 51 senators vote on it, then it happens.
And it depends how the motion is framed. It could be a motion to call him. Could be a motion to issue a subpoena.
Or depose him, maybe?
It could be a motion for deposition. So what happened in the Bill Clinton trial is after opening arguments and the questions from the senators, then they engaged in a series of depositions. So it wasn't trial on the floor or testimony on the floor of the Senate, but it was depositions that could be then used in evidence. Mm-hmm. That's possible, too. And my view on this question, so there's a lot of debate. Do we have witnesses or not? I last week was doing was on Hugh Hewitt's show. And Hugh was arguing it's really a bad idea to call witnesses. And I said, Hugh, look, that might be right. That might be wrong. But I said, you know what? It's not your decision. That decision ought to be the president's and his legal team. I could understand the president's legal team if we have 2 weeks of trial, if they presented their case, if they feel like they've laid out all the facts they need, I could see the president's legal team saying, you know what, we're done, game over. And if they decide that, I'm certainly not going to force them to call witnesses. If they don't want to call witnesses, I'm not going to make them do that. But I believe if the president decides he wants to call witnesses to tell his case, that due process and fairness compels the Senate to let him do that.
So I want to talk to you about this great product, and all of you guys need it, and it's a really good product, and it's Tommy John, and they make underwear, and it's the revolutionary clothing brand that's redefined comfort for Americans everywhere, including me. Look, they're innovative, they're smart about what they do, and they're very comfortable. They obsess over every little detail and stitch by using proprietary fabrics that perform like nothing you've ever worn before. Look, no one wants to talk about it, but everyone needs it. You guys need good underwear. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. If you prefer to shop in stores, you can find them in over 1,200 retail locations across the country, including Nordstrom stores nationwide. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. And again, they obsess over every little detail and stitch. Men's and women's underwear, it has a real comfort and stay-put waistbands. And they give the 3 F's about your underwear and upgrade with Tommy John today. You know what those 3 F's are? Fabric, fit, and function. So right now, hurry to TommyJohn.com/Charlie for 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Charlie for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Charlie.
And I see it both ways. I did a podcast where I said part of me really wants to see it almost like the last episode of Seinfeld where they bring in every character.
Yeah.
There's so many characters that have been involved in even this particular impeachment, from Adam Schiff colluding with – we don't say the whistleblower's name here, but we say Schmerich Schmerella. So we don't say his actual name because we don't want to break the Whistleblower Protection Act. But I don't even know if it
okay, – let me actually stop you,
sure.
Because federal law doesn't bar you from saying
the whistleblower's
name. Oh, is
that right? Does it bar you?
It doesn't bar me.
Okay.
It only bars the inspector general of the CIA.
Well, then Eric Schmerella then. Schmerich Schmerella.
And listen, from my end, I actually don't know who the whistleblower
is. Suspected.
I've seen on Twitter and the internet this guy identified. Yeah. I don't know him. But my view is we ought to call whoever the whistleblower is, and in particular, because if it is this fellow who's been identified.
Highly questionable.
He was an advisor to Joe Biden.
Yes.
On Ukraine.
And traveled to Ukraine.
Look.
Multiple
the,
times.
The reason why, if this fellow's the whistleblower, he needs to be called, or there's a very good argument that he needs to be called, is that he is a potential fact witness right at the core of the facts going on here. Look, this whole argument – the Democrats' argument was that asking for this investigation is an abuse of power, and they started it with it being bribery. The simple response in the White House defense is listen, any president, any federal government has the authority to investigate corruption. And when it comes to Hunter Biden, what we know now is that Hunter Biden was paid anywhere from $50,000 to $83,000 a month. I've seen conflicting numbers. $83,000 a month is $1 million a year. He was paid that by the largest natural gas company in Ukraine. He has, as far as I know, no background whatsoever in oil and gas.
It's not from Texas or Midland, I'll tell you.
And you and I both know oil and gas people. We know people on the boards of natural gas companies. They tend to be geologists, geophysicists, they know something about
petroleum
drilling
engineers, that, minor details.
In this instance, it seems obvious that if Hunter Biden's name were Hunter Smith, he wouldn't be being paid $1 million a year by Burisma. He was paid that because his daddy was vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, we have Joe Biden on video bragging that he told the president of Ukraine that he was going to hold $1 billion, something like Dr. Evil, $1 billion in aid and loan guarantees unless Ukraine fired the prosecutor that was potentially investigating Burisma, the company on which Hunter Biden served on the board.
Now, he brags about it.
He's proud about it. I mean, he's – it's macho.
I fired that son of a
– yeah. So listen, at the end of the day – do I know as a conclusive factual matter that what happened there was corrupt? No. But it's perfectly reasonable to investigate. And what the president said is investigate what happened. There's more than enough prima facie evidence of corruption that it merits investigation. And one of the things that shows just what a kangaroo court the House was is no House Democrats wants an answer to this question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hunter Biden has never been asked. How about a real simple question? So, Mr. Biden, $1 million a year. What'd you do for that? Like, just a simple, basic, like, what were your job descriptions?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are you in the habit of just people handing you $1 million for doing nothing? Or what were your responsibilities? Nobody has asked that.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to ask that. Adam Schiff doesn't want to ask that. And the president is fully justified in investigating corruption and at least asking the question, look, you pay somebody's kid $1 million a year. And by the way, here's another question that nobody's asked. All right, fine. Let's say Hunter Biden is getting paid $1 million a year from Burisma. Why didn't Joe Biden say, guys, I'm going to stay out of Ukraine issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just going to recuse myself. You know, my son's getting paid a whole bunch of money. There are all sorts of other people, you know,
he was advised to do that by Ambassador Taylor. I think it was Ambassador Taylor, the guy that wore the bow tie that even testified against Trump. He went to Obama counsel and said, this is not good.
So look, I'll give an example at a much, much lower level of government, which is in the George W. Bush administration.
Where you met your wife.
I met my wife on the campaign, and then I went to work in the administration. We were both kind of young to mid-level staffers on the campaign and then in the administration. Heidi went to work in the Treasury Department, and she ran the Latin America office and Treasury for Latin America and the Caribbean. I had had an investment from when I was a lawyer in private practice in a private equity firm in the Caribbean. When Heidi got that job to head up U.S. Treasury policy for Latin America and the Caribbean, I sold my stock. I sold my interest. And in fact, we got a conflict of interest determination. We went to the Treasury General Counsel's office. They have an office that assesses these things. And we got a letter from them saying, yes, sell your stock, because I didn't want to have any financial interest in the region she was responsible for. So I sold it. I sold out entirely. That happens, by the way, all the time. Someone comes into the cabinet, if you have an interest in something, you divest yourself from it. Joe Biden could have said, gosh, my son is getting really rich off of natural gas in Ukraine. How about, as vice president, I just stay out of natural gas in Ukraine? That would have been a reasonable thing to say. Nobody's asked Joe Biden that.
The same with China. The China stuff is equally as concerning. Not as pertinent to this particular impeachment, but it's a pattern that his son was getting very rich while his father was steering policy.
And these are reasonable questions to ask. Now, the media's standard response on this is they say this is settled. It's been investigated and it's settled. In fact, it's almost like there was a mandate from the media star chamber that whenever anyone brings up Hunter Biden, they say at a minimum, no wrongdoing has been proven. Sometimes they say no wrongdoing has been alleged. I've seen that more than once, which on its face is laughably false. Yeah, a whole lot of wrongdoing has been alleged. I don't know if it's been proven, but it ain't true that no wrongdoing has been alleged. So I, last Sunday, was on George Stephanopoulos' show. I brought up these facts. The media hates when you bring up these facts.
You did excellent on that, by the way. Sorry to interrupt, but you defended Senator Kennedy from Louisiana. No, that was Chuck Todd.
That was Chuck Todd the week before.
You were excellent on that. Sorry, continue.
Actually, the reason I went on Chuck Todd the week before is I had watched John Kennedy, senator from Louisiana, on Chuck Todd, and Chuck basically called
him a Russian
called
agent.
Kennedy a Russian agent, and it pissed me off.
For a Politico article.
So I picked up the phone and called my staff and said, I'll tell you what, book me on Meet the Press next week. And it just, I was so pissed.
You were excellent.
At how Chuck Todd treated John Kennedy.
Sorry, you were talking about Stephanopoulos.
But it's none of these guys. Look, one of the consequences of the age of Trump is Donald Trump has broken the media. Mm-hmm. They are shattered husks of their former selves. Look, the media was always biased, but they used to. Chuck Todd actually knows how to be a journalist. There was a time when he sort of kind of tried. He was always somewhat biased, but he sort of kind of tried. He's not trying anymore. They hate Trump so much.
He's become an activist.
That it's just, it's this raging fury that if you point to any facts that are inconsistent with the Democratic narrative, they attack you, they scream, they stick their fingers in their ear and say, I can't hear you. So when I pointed out Hunter Biden being paid by Burisma, Joe Biden claiming credit for firing the prosecutor, Stephanopoulos immediately intervenes. Well, that's all been investigated and rejected. And I said, George, it hadn't been investigated. Hunter Biden didn't testify in the House. The House Democrats stopped the investigation. But their talking point, and this is a standard Democratic practice. If you go back to Bill Clinton and Whitewater. Mm-hmm. So their standard Democratic practice was to leak something and then immediately say, that's all been investigated and rejected. And the media...
And they'd leak it on like a Friday at 4 p.m.
Right,
or something.
Right. And once it's out,
Stephanopoulos did it. He was the one that was doing it in the White House.
So here's some basic questions. Like I said, Hunter Biden was paid $50,000 a month, $83,000 a month. Look, $33,000 a month is a big delta. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the right number is. Why don't I know? Because there's actually been no investigation and nobody knows how much the guy was paid. Like, how about some very basic facts? Mm-hmm. What he got paid, what he did, and what Joe Biden did. What was his involvement? The Democrats have zero interest in answering those questions, but you know what? The president was fully justified in asking for an investigation to investigate real corruption.
Do you guys have crushing student loans? Well, you guys need to learn about Credible. What is Credible? An online marketplace that gets you pre-qualified student loan refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. Benefits of refinancing to a lower rate are primarily saving on interest or lowering your monthly payment. Secondarily, you consolidate all your student loan bills in one place. With a lower term, get debt-free faster. Credible customers have been given awesome reviews about how much better their lives are thanks to being able to refinance with Credible. You see actual pre-qualified rates, whereas with some online marketplaces, you'll get range of rates or ballpark estimates. Checking rates does not impact your credit. Again, checking rates does not impact your credit. I hate that. I hate that when people are charging you just to check your credit, Credible doesn't. Very important. They're so confident they have the best rates, they'll give you $200. It's amazing. If you close a loan with a better rate elsewhere, they'll never sell your data, so you won't receive spam and phone calls from dozens of lenders. Please visit Credible.com/Charlie. That's Credible.com/Charlie. And when you close a loan via Credible, they'll give you a $200 gift card. Fill in a couple pieces of information to check what rates you are eligible for. Again, that is Credible.com/Charlie. Refinance. Start saving. Well, and the other part of this that I think has not been talked about enough is Joe Biden was also pushing for more U.S. foreign aid to Ukraine to help the LNG development of Ukraine. So he was pushing for U.S. taxpayer dollars to benefit his son's company, which is cash for Ukrainian gas.
That's true. And it's also, listen, I'm in a kind of an unusual position because I am one of the most vocal defenders of Ukraine in the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the reason is, and I also am one of the biggest Russia hawks in the Senate. Vladimir Putin is a KGB thug. I do find it like screamingly laughable that Democrats have suddenly discovered Russia's bad. Like, for 50 years, the Democratic Party have been apologists for the Soviet Union and for Russia.
I've said this on our podcast. Sorry, in the 80s, they were nicer to the Soviet Union than they are now.
Look, you and I both remember when Obama was president, he was sitting with Medvedev and he leaned over and said, tell Vladimir, I'll have more flexibility after the election. You and I both remember, you may be too young to remember the debate between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama.
Boy, that would have been 2012. Okay. I remember it. So, and then he said, 1980s called, they want their foreign policy back.
That's exactly right. So that was the Democrats' position since then. Look, I support Ukraine. Why? Because Ukraine is standing up to Russian aggression and wants to stand with the West. That's mm-hmm. good for us. So when there were protesters in the Maidan Square in Kyiv, I went to the Maidan Square. I met with those student protesters who were standing up against oppression. Same, just like I met with student protesters in Hong Kong 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a vocal believer, and in fact, during the Obama administration, I repeatedly advocated for giving lethal military aid to Ukraine. Why?
Javelins.
Because the Ukrainians were fighting against the Russians. And I said, look, I don't want to send our soldiers in. I don't want to risk our sons and daughters to fight the Russians. But the Ukrainians have been invaded. Crimea, by the way, Obama was president when Crimea was invaded.
Was annexed, yeah.
During the entire Obama administration, the most they would send over to Ukraine was teddy bears, blankets, and MREs.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, Charlie, if you've ever tried to take on a Russian tank with a teddy bear, it doesn't work well. And so I was publicly making the case, let's give them lethal defensive military aid so they can fight back against Russia. Obama said, no, 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 no. What's happened under Donald Trump? We've sold them Javelin missiles to take out Russian tanks.
That's right.
So on substance, Trump's policy has been markedly more pro-Ukraine and anti-Russia. But the media ignores that entirely because it's counter to their narrative.
That's right. And, well, Senator, we could go on and on, and I know you have to hit the stage for our Student Action Summit, but good luck in this upcoming circus in the U.S. Senate, and thank you for your leadership. And I just want to say you are one of the few senators in D.C. that actually fight for what's right. There's only a handful of you guys, and obviously the Republicans are better than Democrats, but there's only a few real liberty fighters out there that get it and understand the Constitution and look forward to many, many good things to come.
Well, Charlie, and let me come right back at you and say thank you for standing up and fighting. As a young person, it's not easy. You take a lot of slings and arrows, and you have demonstrated backbone and strength and leadership, and it matters. And what you've organized with Turning Point has made a profound difference in this country, and we're just getting started.
Thank you.
And for everyone listening, look, Charlie was 18 when he started this. I remember you mm-hmm. back then. You don't have to wait till you're 30 or 40 or even 20 to engage and speak out and use your voice. If you're 14 years old and you're in high school, you can get out and speak out and use your voice and speak for liberty, and that's how we defend our freedoms. And so I salute your leadership, Charlie, but also the leadership of everyone listening who's standing up and speaking for liberty. It matters.
Thank you so much, Senator. Appreciate it.
What a great conversation that was with Senator Ted Cruz. Make sure you guys are subscribed to The Charlie Kirk Show. Pick up your phone right now. Type in Charlie Kirk Show, press subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. And if you want to get involved with the strongest, fastest growing conservative organization, over 1,500 high school and college campuses across the country, Turning Point USA. We have the largest events. We have the Women's Summit, Latino Summit, Black Leadership Summit, Jewish Leadership Summit, over 8 regional conferences. We're on pace to have over 1,000 chapters. Go to tpusa.com. That's tpusa.com. We have some great episodes coming up later in the week here with the Vice President of the United States. You guys do not want to miss that. And also email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. freedom@charliekirk.com. Till next time, Charlie Kirk signing off from The Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, and email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much.
There are things that should not be. Copycat killers. They exist. Those who are compelled to turn bloody fiction into a real-life horror story.
He was inspired by the Joker.
They do it because the acts give them power and control.
The license to kill.
Life imitates art, and unfortunately, so does death.
Reels and Podcast One, who brought you Murder Made Me Famous, comes the next great true crime podcast, Copycat Killers. Join host Dr. J. Buzz Von Ornsteiner as he analyzes true crimes based on Hollywood hits. New episodes every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.